Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to exchange some news, views and a bit of timely advice on all things gardening. Later on, I'll be meeting up with Mark Rosenberg, garden media man and currently press relations officer with Hornby Whitefoot. But this week, what a week for weather. Last Thursday, the temperatures were tropical. And then, for 2 hours from 5:30 in the morning on Friday, it rained stair rods. And by the time I got up to the RHS garden at Hyde Hall, 3 hours or so later, it was scorching again and no sign of the rain. It had all evaporated. Then on Saturday and Sunday, the temperatures dropped like a stone and the wind got up. Oh, I do hate wind thrashing plants and doing so much damage. I was back up at Hyde Hall again on the Saturday and some pots of petunias that we hadn't planted were blowing all over the place and had got really dry. There was only one thing to do and that was get the trowel out and get them into the ground and give them a good watering. They should be fine in just a day or two. At least the wind has dropped and we've had a few more splashes of rain from occasional showers. But there we are. That's gardening in Britain in the summer. There's quite a lot happening in our world. I was interested to read that wholesale nursery Allensmore in Herefordshire has launched a Golden Valley Plants, a new online national delivery service for people unable to leave home. The Taylor family are introducing lots of really good new plants, including that catmint, Nepeta Persian Blue, that I keep on about. What a fantastic plant that is. Flowers and flowers and flowers. And then as the stems begin to flop a bit, you prune it back and within weeks, it's up, bolt upright and flowering again, attracting bees and butterflies as if there was no end to the nectar that it produces. Sunflowers remain as popular as ever, and were given an extra boost by the Duchess of Cambridge, royal patron of the East Anglian Children's Hospices. She planted some sunflowers with the children at the Nook, one of the East Anglian Children's Hospices. We have 25 of the latest Helianthus Sunblast from Syngenta that have been planted in Floral Fantasia. Each one of them has been raised from cuttings, it's vegetatively propagated. But boy, do those plants grow. They've got a rather soft, woolly sort of leaf and have the potential, each plant, to produce 1,000 flowers, and already they're absolutely sparkling, bright yellow with a black centre. I hear that Annabella Makin-Jones of the Yorkshire strawberry grower, Annabella's Delicious British, reports that Ocado have taken all the fruits normally sold to summer events and the hospitality industry. They grow 18,000 tonnes a year and there's been a 20% increase in retail strawberry sales, according to Annabelle. And berry grower Anthony Snell says the warm spring and driest May for 124 years has given fruit very high quality. Can say that again. I've had some really super strawberries and raspberries, so sweet and really luscious. D.T. Brown report a 4x increase in sales during the lockdown and are just sending out their biggest ever summer and autumn catalogue, focusing on things to sow now. Many of their new customers are 24 to 35-year-olds, apparently, living in urban or metropolitan areas. And you can get a copy of this latest catalogue if you log on www.dtbrownseeds.co.uk. Well, there's plenty of questions and queries coming from some of those new to gardening. Here's one. I have some compost that I would like to reuse, but can't remember the ingredients to make it better. Well, if you are reusing compost, and I certainly do several times, the first thing is to flush it through, just give it a good watering. That'll wash out any accumulated salts, you know, if there has been quite a lot of plant food built up. And then you'll need to start feeding again pretty well straight away. I mean, most composts, when you buy them new, have enough well-balanced plant food to last for about 6 to 8 weeks. But if you've flushed, reused compost through, then you'll need to start feeding straight away. And there's two choices. You can either use a dilute liquid feed or one of those granular, long-lasting fertilisers. But just the pack. Some of them will feed for 6 weeks, others for 12 weeks, and even for 6 months. There was another query too from somebody whose sweet peas need a boost. I'm not surprised. Sweet peas don't like those very high temperatures. And just check to make sure that the soil well down is moist. Sweet peas will, I'm afraid, need a good lot of water at this time of year and feeding about every 10 days or so if the soil has not been improved by digging in manure last autumn and during the winter. A young lady new to gardening proudly showed me some sweet and hot peppers growing in pots on her patio this week. Apparently the plants came from Aldi and they are growing very well. But as I saw, you know, a developing fruit on the sweet peppers, I suggested she cut that. She really wanted it to stay until it was nice and red. But with the first fruit on sweet peppers, your best bet is to either pinch them off before they start to develop, or certainly cut them as soon as they're edible. Because if a young plant puts all its energy into those first one or two fruits, I'm afraid it can slow the growth and reduce the overall yield quite considerably. Exactly the same goes for cucumbers. Grit your teeth and remove the first one or two little tiny cucumbers, and then you can be sure there will be lots and lots to follow. If you're growing dahlias and they're making some nice strong growth, it's a good time to just pinch out the tip so that they break from the base and you get six or so good stems rather than the one straight one. Oh, and I have to talk about the Alströmeria Indian Summer. What a fantastic plant that is. It's flowering itself as if you wouldn't believe. The thing to remember with the garden Alströmerias, well, with all these Alströmerias, is that you don't cut them, you pluck them. You know, you pull the stem out. And if you want some to take indoors, well then, yes, you pull the stems and then cut the bottom few inches off. And equally, if they've flowered and the flowers have set seed, then you need to pull those out. And the more you pull, the more new flowers will come. Our guest today is Mark Rosenberg, a fellow contributor and news editor at Amateur Gardening for a number of years, and currently press relations officer with public relations company Hornby Whitefoot.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Mark, I believe you've been looking at the influence and the effect of the coronavirus in the horticultural trade and gardening.
Yes, indeed I have. Quite astonishing figures coming through from the gardening trade. Really positive news to report. Quite a far cry from where we were back in March at the start of lockdown. Since garden centres reopened, and with many actually launching online services during the lockdown, the figures are incredible. Researching at the moment, I've found one of the biggest areas for demand is compost. Speaking to the Greener Gardening Company this week, you know, formerly Board Namona, they saw their sales in May or actually go up by 20 to 30%. And by the end of June, they think it may even be a record year for compost, which is quite incredible when you consider the number of retail outlets that were shut at peak season.
Yeah, and it's a big, heavy, bulky product, isn't it?
One of the questions that I was asked is, you know, why can't people get the compost they want now that they're heading to the garden centre to catch up? And it's not as simple as just sending out lorry loads, because there are a number of issues that suppliers have had to face. One of them being the reduced availability of ingredients such as loam and grit. Suppliers of those ingredients have had to restart production, but with social distancing measures in place. So even if they work flat out, they cannot just flood the warehouses with labour. They have to take the safety of the workforce seriously. And that has caused some shortages in the raw ingredients, and the same situation with packaging. So although they are now catching up and supply has improved, there have been some shortages, and some have had to reduce their product range and focus on the core products to enable to meet demand.
Yeah, I mean, I visited two garden centres, the Van Haag one at Cheney's and Aylett's at just near St Albans. And I mean, it was almost as if they were going to close down. The place was empty.
I've witnessed the same thing, actually, just seen empty wooden pallets and a bit of shrink wrap on the floor. That's not the situation at all garden centres, but I think it just shows how keen people are to get on with gardening and how they really are playing catch up. Speaking to mail order suppliers, I mean, the Suttons Group, which operates Suttons, Dobies and the Organic Gardening Catalogue, they say their sales of compost by mail order have absolutely gone through the roof. They're up by 732% this year.
How can you cope with those kinds of increases?
They've had to take a sort of unprecedented number of steps, including during lockdown, there was a queuing system on their website just to be able to cope with the traffic. But people have also had to be more patient with deliveries. But you've got to remember that these companies, again, are operating on a skeleton workforce to ensure safety. And there are also delays in the postal system. Again, all of that has eased now and everything is catching up. But what people are telling me is that where peak gardening season would normally tail off at the end of May and into June, it's still going strong.
And that, in light of the weather, I don't know how it is with you down in Poole, but I've been up at Hyde Hall this afternoon trying to get some summer bedding planted. It's been quite warm up here.
It's been an absolute scorcher here today, and I think it's only going to get warmer. Only at lunchtime today, I was out moving some containers of bedding plants that were actually getting leaf scorch and putting them in the shade for a bit until they establish. and it's been an incredibly dry season as well. I mean, normally it's your neck of the woods, Peter, that's one of the driest areas, but down here in Dorset we barely had a drop of rain. We didn't have any April showers and nothing significant to report in May. It was only last week we got a few torrential downpours, but I garden on very light sandy soil and it's like dust again already. So yes, I'll be out with the hose again later.
It's timely to remind people that if they've got plants in black containers, they can get very hot on the sunny side. I like to see them dropped inside a slightly bigger pot so that we have almost sort of double glazing around the pot.
Yes, indeed. It's very important to be on the case with watering at the moment. And also, actually, one of the manufacturers I've been working with, a company called Prima, they manufacture what's a range called the Tierra Verde planters. These are reasonably new on the market and they've got built-in water reservoirs, which is a really clever idea, because if you're away for the day or you simply forget to water, the reservoirs at the bottom of these containers collect water and can actually keep your plants going while you're away, which is very valuable, particularly when you think about the canopy that bedding plants can have on them at this time of year. Even if we do have a downpour, a lot of that actually won't penetrate down into the compost. So containers that actually have their own built-in reservoirs, I think, are possibly going to be the way forward here.
Well, and aren't they very eco-friendly, Prima?
They are. They're made of recycled tyres. And that hopefully will give an indication of how strong they are. If you think about what a tyre has to go through while it's on the life of your car, potholes and all the wear and tear, the material is incredibly robust. In fact, over 200 ingredients go into each tyre. And I've read that 2.5 billion tyres are produced every year. And it would take them each tyre 80 years to decompose if it was thrown into landfill. But through modern technology, 6 kilograms of rubber crumb can be recycled from one tyre and made into these Tierra Verde planters. And as a result, they don't crack if they're exposed to severe frost during winter. They don't rot or stain. And that also has a lot of benefits for garden retailers as well, because it cuts down on breakages in transit, in warehouses, and also as a result of customers' trolleys. You know, often displays are struck and there are losses there. These things really won't break, so they're very robust.
And they're very comfortable, aren't they, to handle?
They are indeed. If you sort of strike your leg against one, it's going to be much softer than it would if you were talking about a stone container. They're quite lightweight to lift. They've got a nice feel to them. And a nifty feature is that should you overwater, you might be thinking, gosh, you know, it's got a reservoir, the roots will drown. But there's actually a little overflow valve, so you can't overfill the reservoir. And should you wish to overwinter a plant indoors in a conservatory in your house during winter, then there is a little plug in the base that you can use to plug the reservoir, and so no water will leak out of the bottom. So if you want to grow an exotic or tender plant, for example, and bring it indoors over winter, you can do without any risk of water escaping and damaging and leaking onto the floor.
Yeah, so a very good design. But to go back to your research, did you do anything on seed sales? Because there seems to be a great renewal in interest in growing your own.
Absolutely. This is some research I did for the gardening app Candide, and I spoke to a lot of seed companies. Going back to the Suttons Group first, their seed sales soared by more than 1,000% in April compared to the same month the previous year. Their top grow-your-own edible seed performers, I mean, looking through my list, Dwarf French Bean Safari, up by 1,075%. The Good Old Tomato Gardener's Delight, up by 900%. Carrot Early Nance, up by almost 4,000%.
And everything you've mentioned, and particularly the top seller, that French bean would be a very good one for people to grow for the first time, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, because one thing that suppliers are telling me is that they believe they're getting a lot of orders from people who, particularly younger consumers, who are frightened by the shortages in the supermarkets and have spent time in their gardens during lockdown, and they want to have a go at growing your own, if in a way for food security as well as for the health benefits. But it wasn't just Sutton's. I spoke to King's Seeds in Essex, and they saw their orders spike fourfold in April and May. They had to restrict website orders to 500 a day in order to be able to manage the demand. And their biggest sellers in March were beetroot, lettuce, tomato, rocket and beans. While Mr. Fothergill's, their veg seed sales were up by over 500% in May, and flower seeds were up by 300%. And also, another one I spoke to here, and this is a really interesting one, was Burnham Nurseries in Devon. They are a specialist supplier of orchids, as I'm sure you know. And their mail order sales went up by 300% during lockdown. And I spoke to the manager, who I've known for many years there, and I said, you know, what caused this? Because I thought it was more grow your own and food. And she said, actually, their flowering hybrids and homegrown species have been in really good demand, partly because of enthusiasts adding to their collections, you know, during lockdown, as well as people sending orchids and gifts to loved ones they couldn't see because of the ongoing need to self-isolate and remain at home.
Oh, yes, because that would work quite well. Mark, how did you get into gardening in the beginning?
It's an unusual story because I come from a family that has no background in gardening. My father has always been involved in the management of care homes and my mother was an estate agent. And it was actually in 1981 when my parents divorced and we moved to a smaller house in North London. But like many houses of that era, it had a long 120-foot back garden. The previous owners were keen gardeners. There were loads of mature shrubs, rhododendrons, azaleas. And I became fascinated by this and started to tend the garden. And then fast forward a few years, I stumbled across Gardener's World one Friday night, and it was presented by Jeff Hamilton. And the next day, Saturday morning, I wanted to have a go. So I got on my bike and cycled down to Woolworths and I bought a packet of pea seeds, some compost and a mini propagator. Actually trying to cycle home with compost over the handlebars probably wasn't recommended. But I sowed these pea seeds, don't know why, in a propagator. And I remember lifting the lid to see if anything had germinated and remembering the excitement when those first shoots actually came up. And that led me on to loads of other things, actually, you know, tending the lawn, digging another fish pond, clearing a big patch of weeds at the bottom, and which was once a vegetable garden and started to grow beans and potatoes and brassicas and strawberries. There was a greenhouse with only a few panes of glass that I patched up with polythene sheeting from Homebase, filled it with tomatoes and started growing bedding plants. And I started doing a gardening round from the back of my car, the Ford Fiesta, which all my tools went into. And there was no Twitter or Facebook back then, you know, it spread by word of mouth. And I started to pick up more gardening clients and ended up doing their hanging baskets and containers and such like. But it was when I took a photo of some daffodil bulbs that had been forgotten about in a carrier bag behind the greenhouse, and they had grown and flowered. And I had these prints developed, and I sent them into Amateur Gardening magazine, and the editor published it as his letter of the week. And it was fantastic to see that in print. And from then on, I started to read gardening magazines. I got a job, a Saturday job at a little garden centre that was tucked into railway sidings, and just sort of learnt on the job, really, reading magazines, learning about plants. I had a good idea of what I wanted to do as a career, but back in the late 80s and 90s, horticulture wasn't even on the radar of most careers advisors. And I remember being sat in front of a careers advisor. He was very old school, like an old school headmaster, and he stared down his glasses at me and he says, "So you want to be a gardener, eh? Do you have no ambition, boy?"
Oh, goodness.
And I thought, wow, I don't think we're going to get on. But I'm quite stubborn and I wanted to persevere. But there was no internet then. You couldn't just look things up online. So I went down a different route. There was a new presenter on TV who I'd been watching. So I wrote to this Mr. Titchmarsh, care of BBC Pebble Mill, to say, "This is what I'm doing. I really like it. How can I turn this into a career?" And full credit to Alan, he wrote back to me and put me in touch with Capel Manor and Whittle College. And I decided to go to Whittle and do a degree in horticulture.
Amazing story.
Yeah.
Does Alan know that he influenced you in that way?
I think I mentioned it briefly. I'm sure I've still got the letter in the in the loft somewhere.
I keep that letter, Mark.
Absolutely. I mean, I was quite shocked to get a reply, but it was a lovely thing. And as I did follow Alan's advice. And while I was studying, I was fortunate to apply to work on Horticulture Week.
Which is our main trade magazine, yeah.
And I loved it. I can still remember the excitement of getting my first byline. And that was that was for a story on how British rose growers had fared that season. And within no time at all, even though I was on sandwich year, I found myself at Heathrow Airport at the crack of dawn, getting on planes, going to trade fairs and nurseries across Europe. And I loved it. And I thought, this is fantastic. I'd like to do more of this after I finish my degree.
And Mark, we never lose that thrill of seeing the byline, do we?
I know, and I don't think you see that thrill so much from a byline online on a screen. There's something about a newspaper or a magazine, seeing the printed word, seeing all your research, comments, facts and figures go, and particularly when you get letters and response from readers. I've always thought that if you get no response whatsoever, then you're probably not doing a very good job. But if your story is talked about, you must have done something right.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yes, you need that response. Mark, you know, you enthusiastically garden as well as commentating on it. Have you got a good tip for our listeners? You know, one for the keen gardener, perhaps, and a tip for somebody starting off, although your story should be enthusiasm enough to get people going from the purchase of a packet of peas.
Thank you, Peter. Well, indeed, yes, I do. I can answer both of that. And certainly the tip. During lockdown, on our once-a-day permitted walks that we were allowed, I got to know the neighbourhood very well, walking round and nosing into people's front gardens. And I was amazed at the number of people that were watering in broad daylight or had lawn sprinklers running in the heat of the day. And my advice is don't, because a lot of that water will just be lost to evaporation. It can even scorch leaves now the sun is very strong. I tend to water late in the evening at dusk, you know, when temperatures are cooler, directing water right at the base of the plant, allowing it to soak deep into the soil and then repeating, so it has plenty of time to absorb the moisture. And also, don't waste a lot of water watering lawns. A healthy lawn will recover when, you know, the rains return. You know, grass automatically shuts down and then it bounces back. It will take a really severe, prolonged drought to do significant damage to a long-term, to a healthy lawn.
You've just prompted my memory again. Haven't you been doing work with one of the lawn seed companies?
I have indeed, yes. I've been working with Johnson's Lawn Seed, and they're investing a lot of money and time into producing lawn seed that can cope with the weather extremes that we're seeing so often now. You know, they're very well aware the seasons are less defined. We go through winters where it rains and rains until there's endless flooding, and then we go through summers where we barely get any rain for 2 or 3 months. And they have produced a number of new seeds after trials, including their quick lawn seed that has been reformulated and needs much less water to actually germinate, which is fantastic if we have a dry autumn. I think it needs about a third of the water that grass seed would normally require. And they've also brought out a new version of their popular brand Tough Grass. And this is one I'd really like to mention, because not only is it a very resilient, weatherproof grass seed, but it's the first grass seed in the UK that has resistance to dogweed damage. And any listeners who have got a dog or have relatives and visitors that bring their dogs and those dogs then weigh on the lawn will know that the lawns turn yellow and you get these horrible patches. But if you sow with this, it won't turn yellow due to dog urine damage. They actually, over in Denmark at the parent company, did 672 tests to stimulate the effect of dog urine on 168 different varieties of grass across 7 species.
It's amazing what people do.
Indeed, yes. I wouldn't have liked to have had that job, you know, over a number of years. Each dog urine mix had to be applied in a number of concentrations just to check that everything worked. And the result is lawn seed that is extremely resilient to dogweed damage. And they've actually reported some very strong sales, I think up by about 30% this season, partly due to people actually getting on with lawn care jobs early in lockdown, and others, you know, particularly pet owners, and this has been marketed very heavily in the pet trade, as a solution to a problem that's been a real hassle for dog owners for years.
Yeah. Mark, it's great to speak to you.
And to you, Peter.
I hope that
thank
we'll
you.
Meet up soon, you know, with this lockdown. All of our press get-togethers have been abandoned, so will we...
Hopefully, yes. Hopefully, you know, later in the season or next year, we'll be able to meet up and see what the industry has to offer.
There's a sting in my tailpiece this week. Bees are currently a topic very much in the public domain, with their importance pollinating a wide range of crops and, of course, giving us honey. Graham Clark in Amateur Gardening keeps unearthing interesting facts in his weekly miscellany, and I was interested to read, "Honey made from the nectar of rhododendrons causes mad honey intoxication, which lasts for 24 hours and causes dizziness, lack of energy, sweating, sickness and low blood pressure. We are, however, safe with bought honey because the pooling from many sources dilutes to a harmless degree. Just if you happen to keep bees, keep them away from massed rhododendron flowering in spring." Well, I'm off out into the garden just to watch the busy bees, and I need to be quite busy. Boy, there's much to do. Be with you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.